peace. We're all going to church to celebrate independence.
See
ya. Yeah, man, I just want to big up all of my fans and all of my friends there. Big up all the video production, all who put it together. And, enough respect, right? More bless.
Every time, my brother, enough respect.
Yeah, man.
So I want to get a friend of the brothers.
CKUT Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade.
This week on From Embers, I'm pleased to share an interview with three anarchists involved with Escaping Tomorrow's Cages, a series of texts that lay out the coming wave of provincial jail expansions in Ontario and propose a strategy for how they might be opposed. The essay is being published in six parts throughout the month of May. It opens with an invitation to help build a province-wide struggle against the expansions currently centered in the east and north, with an eye to probable future waves of prison expansion in central and southwestern Ontario. After describing the projects, they go on to argue for an abolitionist and anti-recuperative approach to opposing new prisons, provide an analysis of the Toronto South Detention Centre as exemplary of contemporary techniques of incarceration in this province, and posit a concrete strategy for building a regional campaign against the prison expansion projects and the financial and political interests behind them. You can read the six-part essay online at escapingtomorrowscages.org, which also hosts a variety of resources, links, and news articles to paint a broader picture of the Ontario prison expansion and the emerging struggle against it. And as always, you can find all of our back episodes online at frommembers.libsyn.com.
Our collective is, we're just a small group of friends who've all done various types of prison-related organizing in the last decade plus, and we just launched this project that right now is mostly taking the form of a text called Escaping Tomorrow's Cages, and the subject is prison expansion in Ontario. So looking at some projects that are coming up in the next few years and that are already part of a strategy that's underway from the provincial government, and the sort of intention of this project is to put that on people's radar and start and share information about sort of that strategy and start talking about ways that we think people can contribute to a struggle of stopping the prisons from being built.
So why form this initiative now? Like, what about the current moment motivated you to initiate this project?
I think a few things. One thing, I mean, like I said, this is sort of a strategy, and we see this, like, we're talking about prisons being built and expanded in different parts of Ontario. So right now, particularly Northern Ontario and Eastern Ontario, and this is like something that's been underway for a number of years already. But one thing that's actually, I think, kind of cool about it is that there's like many more years to go. And I think that sometimes their struggles can be like really reactive and feel really urgent. And this actually seemed like a project that could have some real time and like thought put into it. And actually has like a long sort of runway to build the struggle up over the coming years. And I think another piece is just that the pandemic has been pretty demobilizing for struggle, and just or like a variety of factors that maybe has been kind of dampening for people in our lives in the last few years, in terms of even like knowing where we want to focus our energies. And I think for all of us, like returning to anti-prison things is just something that always feels important.
So like, as much as the pandemic's been demobilizing for folks on the outside, it's also the last couple of years has been like a pretty historic wave of organizing inside of provincial prisons around worsening conditions during the pandemic. Like we saw like a dozen significant like mass strikes by prisoners. And, you know, in this collective, like we've been involved with doing solidarity with those things. But we see some of the limitations of what inside struggle can reach when the province is actually building like new prisons that will transform both the conditions that people face and also make it harder for folks to struggle in a lot of ways too. So it seems like a continuation of those things of just like opening up a new front against just this world of prisons.
And who did you write the series of texts for? Like, who did you have in mind as your audience when you came together to write this?
We would hope that it would be reaching like wider than just like an anarchist audience. There were a few groups that we have in mind that we would like want to reach out to in terms of just like networking and building connections. But also just like trying to reach people who want to know, or we feel like this should be like more like of a wider issue that more people should be having this conversation and should be more in the know about what the province is preparing for this prison expansion. So I think we're just trying to reach like a wider audience that would be interested in having more conversations and being more in the know.
Yeah, and I think definitely we hope that people in sort of the anarchist circles in Ontario, in Quebec, and wider will read these texts and will sort of think about some of the ideas that we're putting forward and might find some inspiration there to just like talk with their own people and think about how they might want to respond to these things. And then there's other groups that do prison organizing but might have a different analysis than us. And I think for those people, we're like hoping that they will consider the particular analysis we're putting forward about why to oppose prison expansion and why not to settle for like the reforms that the provincial government's putting forward. And I think also like in the past few years, general public discourse around police has kind of changed, like certainly not for everybody, but in some ways. And to some extent, that's like maybe also reaching discourse around prisons, but not as much. And so I think this might be an opportunity to sort of push that conversation as well.
Yeah, and obviously people, I think, should read the text if they want to know what's coming down the pipe from the provincial government here in Ontario. But can you just give a brief overview of what the coming wave of prison expansion will look like?
So to summarize a few of the projects, first looking at sort of, we see them grouped right now into sort of like a northern strategy and an eastern strategy. So in northern Ontario, there's a new prison being built, which is the Thunder Bay Correctional Complex, that is supposed to have a 325-person capacity, which also definitely is not a hard number, and every prison is filled above capacity. In the end, so we can imagine, you know, more people will end up there than that. And that is supposed to replace the current Thunder Bay Correctional Center, as well as the Kenora Jail. But for the moment, both of those jails are actually also having their capacity increased. And I think we don't fully trust that actually that those prisons are going to eventually close. So ultimately, that's just like could be pretty much doubling the capacity for prisons in Northern Ontario. And that one is further along in the process than Eastern Ontario. Construction is actually supposed to start like in a month, potentially being built as soon as 2024. And then in Eastern Ontario, there's two new prisons being built. The larger of those is in Kemptville, and that is like the Eastern Ontario Correctional Complex. And then there's also in Brockville, a new one being built that is supposed to replace the current jail there, but also will be increasing the capacity of the current jail by 50%. And then also we're seeing the Quinte Jail expand and the St. Lawrence Valley Treatment and Correction Center. I don't remember exactly the acronym. But yeah, both of those also expanding. And so ultimately seeing like a big increase in prison capacity in Eastern Ontario as well. And then that the one in Kemptville is like supposed to be replacing the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center, but it also doesn't feel like clear or guaranteed that that prison is going to close. And maybe we'll see it like repurposed or like its role shift slightly. But again, it really feels like capacity is growing, not just that new facilities are replacing old ones.
Yeah. And one thing that feels important, and like when we're talking about the old jails not necessarily getting closed, even if they do get closed later, like every prison cell that the system has at its disposal is capacity that it can use as it sees fit. Mm-hmm. And if it chooses to use that by eventually closing it, then that's a political decision they'll be making for their own benefit later on. They could also just as well choose to fill it with bodies the way they have in the past and the way that what those buildings were built for. And I think we can get a little bit of a hint about some of the directions that these things might go, because it's not just expanding in like a uniform way, that a lot of this expansion is pretty explicitly targeting women. Like some of the largest increases is in incarceration for people that it considers women. And it's also increasing capacity for things that it calls treatment, which means space for people who are willing to describe their like criminal behavior as being due to mental health or substance issues. So it's expanding these things, and it's also expanding prisons that are being explicitly built for Indigenous people. And they're framing this as progressive in some way, by saying it's like providing culturally sensitive programming in people's home communities or something, which is just like mm-hmm. a way of saying we're going to take people from Thunder Bay and shovel them down to Ontario anymore, or Southern Ontario anymore. But like, I think we can also see this as having like a pretty starkly racial dimension, that they're building new prisons for these like specific groups of people who they want to manage in specific ways.
Yeah, I think historically governments have almost always justified prison expansions and construction as a means to address issues that have been raised by people who are either reformists or opposed to prison. For the example of being like the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center has been under a lot of fire over recent years for the conditions inside there. So how do you respond, especially if the text is sort of aimed at people who aren't explicitly anarchists and aren't necessarily already on side with prison abolition? How do you respond to that narrative that these newer prisons provide more programs or better conditions for people who are incarcerated?
That's a tough one, because that is a fine line to be walking. To be anti-reform or anti-reformist, but like also trying to keep in mind that there are prisoners on the inside who are organizing to have certain conditions be met and wanting to support those struggles. That's, you know, we also have done our own solidarity work for those struggles, and so we want to like keep in mind that those are important goals as well. I think the response to that narrative, if we're looking to like, you know, network with people who aren't explicitly anarchist or have similar politics, is just to, I mean, maybe bring up examples of different, the reform, you know, reformed history, prisoner reforms history, and trying to look at, like, look, they, you know, these were the promises that were made before, and this is how they were never met, or this is how they were met for a time, and then just forgotten about, and trying to, like, have those narratives ready, and also just bring our, like, anti-prison narrative to the forefront, that the reforms, no matter how much money the government's going to give, you're still building cages for humans to go into, and trying to just, like, keep bringing that up and keep that at the forefront, and try and get in front of the narrative that what we're going to make, you know, we're going to make better cages, trying to just match that with you're building cages.
As well, just, like, a lot of the issues that are being raised, like, you know, the government is allowed to frame that in, like, a very narrow way of what are, like, acceptable, like, responses to some of those issues. Like, one of the justifications I was, like, used a lot around pouring money into these new prisons was around segregation, and, like, the province of Ontario's, like, widespread use of segregation in its prisons, and them responding to that by saying they were going to, like, create alternatives to segregation, which just means, like, expanding their infrastructure. And just being able to, like, remind people that that is not the only, like, logical response to that. There's also just, like, actually not holding people in prison, and that the government doesn't have to be the only ones to, like, frame what are, like, acceptable, like, reforms or, like, acceptable ways to, like, solve these problems. And in a lot of cases, like, expanding the prison doesn't need, like, it's so funny that they will use that to justify expanding prison when, like, a lot of times it doesn't even make sense. Like, one of the, like, complaints of being, like, pushed by, like, guards unions is, like, understaffing and, like, how, like, strained their resources are, and somehow, like, building new prisons is going to address that, as if, like, they're not going to continue to face those same problems. And then in terms of, like, addressing requests for programming or things like that, like, again, those are promises that may or may not get kept. And once new prisons are built, like, the infrastructure is there, and people can forever be detained in those places, and, like, the programming will come and go with, like, the whims of any particular government. So it's not a safe bet to, like, expect that building this new infrastructure is going to guarantee any of those, like, prisoners' needs are met anyways.
Yeah, you brought up the Guards Union, which is the Ontario Public Service Employees Union, or they're part of that broader public service union. And my understanding is they've fully embraced this wave of prison expansion, or at least their leadership has. Can you talk a bit about the role of guards unions in prison expansion and sort of the power that they hold in that situation?
I mean, I don't know that they necessarily have power over what policies get enacted, like, per se, but they do definitely have a lot of control over what happens on the day-to-day inside of prisons. And so some of their logic, some of their discourses around, like, crisis and corrections, and I think they'll point to some of the same conditions that we might point to, and that just make, that can be used to just make these very strong arguments about just, like, existing prison conditions being, like, inhuman. So, like, a difference there is that it's, like, literally the prison guards who, like, preside over those conditions and who, like, also create them, right? So it's, like, their defense of themselves, like, as workers, as, like, so-called workers, and their ability to, like, call in sick with no consequence whenever they want to and just, like, have long vacations just means that translates into people getting, like, locked up over the holidays and locked up all summer, you know? And it's just, I think, like, we make a political choice not to, like, aim ourselves at the guards because it does go, like, bigger than them, and they're ultimately not the ones who control, like, what buildings get built. But I think it's, like, important to remember that, like, they use human lives as, like, bargaining chips. And we've seen these moments in, like, recent years where their struggles around, like, so-called work conditions, they've, like, literally just carried out wildcat strikes that led to people's deaths. And so I think when they're taking up these issues that might sound like the same issues that prisoners themselves are raising about their safety, that I think it's like important to remember that this is cynical, and that these bodies, like, of course they're going to argue for their own expansion, and the more prison guards they have, then the more ability they actually have to take over intersectorial unions like OPSU, which is a little bit what's happened, that this like very large public sector union, one of the biggest unions in Ontario, the most kind of one of the most influential blocks of people within that is actually these like prison guards that tend to be like ultra conservative and like just using the union as this like lobbying group for their own essentially power and interests. And I think like right now though, there's like a recent turnover in the leadership of OPSU. Personally, I smell blood in the water a little bit, and it just sounds like there's maybe like a split that is like exploitable within that union right now, and like a bit of a way to crack through probably one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, prison lobby. And then just also in general, the way like that, that within the labor movement, OPSU ends up acting as like a reactionary force. So I think there's an opportunity here to marginalize guards and their interests within the labor movement and within OPSU.
Yeah, it makes me think of the Cops at a QP campaign, where people have been trying to, get, class traitors out of unions or whatever, and targeting that at QP and wondering if there's an opportunity to do that within OPSU as well.
That'd be really interesting. And like, it's actually like a few years ago, there was like a section of guards that wanted to, that were trying to vote to like break off and make their own union, which ultimately was unsuccessful. But one of the things that was interesting was the president of OPSU at the time, who just recently is no longer the president, but cited when he was like being like, no, the prison guards are like so happy in OPSU. And one of the reasons was because of all the prison expansion happening in Ontario. And he's just like, we treat our guards so well and we like champion these issues. So I don't know. I thought that was
nice.
That was interesting when I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree that they're, you know, the guards aren't the ones making the big policy decisions about new prison construction. So maybe the next logical question is who is kind of primarily behind this wave of prison of expansion, and how do we identify sort of who's pulling the strings?
I guess one point to like think about here. I mean, I do think that actually like OPSU is like one place that like should like have some attention put on it, even when it comes to like decisions like that, because of the way the things they've lobbied for over the past few years have like provided that justification. But maybe like one important point is just the fact that this strategy has lasted over like a number of provincial governments and different parties. Like the funding originally for some of these northern and eastern expansions was approved under the Liberal Party and continues to be heavily championed by the Conservative Party. So in that way, like, it really does transcend any like party politics.
I mean, and also like, I think we can take in that this is like reveals like a huge problem with just like Canadian society, where and like the influence of like law and order politics in general, that even as like opinion around police has shifted, and it makes it a little bit harder for like law and order politics to play out around like calling for like more radical and violent policing, it still is possible to just like advocate for more incarceration and for like worse conditions, in order to like appear tough as a politician, and that has like this significant voting bloc that actually like I would say crosses party lines, like it, and yeah, I think that just is this like more fundamental problem that just like that just people who are incarcerated just get seen as just like invisible, and they like don't matter, and any bad thing that happens to them is like just fine. And then simultaneously, these like same governments are able to use like a kind of contradictory almost policy of being like, aren't we so like humane and progressive, and we're like rehabilitating people, and we're gonna like, you know, just make the world a better place through our cages.
Yeah, I think that just goes back to our earlier point of trying to make this issue more widespread, because I think that it can be like the motivation of the voters, of just like, yeah, better prisons, sure, I would vote for that, you know, that we would like widen the narrative, where, you know, we've seen since like the George Floyd protests, we've seen like the defund police movement sort of like take root and move across the United States and parts of Canada. That we would like widen that narrative then to be like, well, the prison industrial complex is a part of that. And prisoners are also, you know, like the defund police movement there's, you know, it's part of it is, you know, getting less people arrested, less people like f***ed with by the cops. Then you're in prison, and then you're sort of like, you know, then you become among the forgotten. And so just trying to like broaden this narrative so that more people are talking about the prison industrial complex, then it becomes, yeah, like less of an okay thing to be like, we're going to expand prisons. We're going to see, we want to see more people hearing that and being anti that.
Yeah. Like, so when I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking about, a campaign that we, ran against a prison expansion, federal prison expansion here in Kingston some years ago. And I remember when I first started looking into it, I think I was reading a lot of critical resistance and analysis out of the US that really focused on privatization or corporate interests that were like heavily intertwined with prison construction and expansion. And I kept looking for that sort of smoking gun in the Canadian context, and I couldn't find it. And I felt like ultimately there's like a different sort of mode of control that exists within the prison system in this context that is maybe more about the state. And of course there are private interests that get rich off of prison contracting. But it's not as overtly profit driven. And I, you know, this is just my own assessment of it, is that it seems to be more about sort of social politics and control than it is about profit.
I mean, I think that's a great point. I feel like it speaks to like a bigger difference between Canadian and American society that's like really, really not new, where like Canada just tends to be more like conservative in this more like traditional way, where it's more like collectively oriented and things tend to be a little bit more centralized through the government, but not in like a socializing way, but more in like an elites take care of the rest of the people kind of way. Whereas like in the US, things have tended to be more like liberal and like the classical sense of just like valuing the role of the like free market and structuring society more than the role of like more or less hereditary elites, you know? So there is just like a different power mode that like tends to operate here, and it's just like reflected in what prisons are for. One of the things you'll hear if you pay attention to the ways that the prison system is coming up as an electoral issue is like the NDP is trying to make an issue out of public-private partnerships, for instance. Which is where like the government basically hands off the building of the prisons to these like enormous transnational construction companies. So there is this like pretty significant element of like profit interest. And if you see just like the way the some of the construction industries kind of like incite like newsletters and things like that are circulating, like these are huge, huge deals within that sector. You know, like these are gonna be some of the like biggest money makers a lot of these like organizations will have during this time period. But that said, yeah, it's really like not quite the same as this like kind of feedback loop between these like huge corporations and like regional politicians and other places.
You're totally right, though, that that shift to public-private partnerships or P3s was also a big thing during the federal prison expansion in 2011 or whenever it was, where the federal government had basically reconstructed its tendering process to accommodate these P3 projects. But they never gave up the state control of like the management of the institution or the labor force. And that seemed to be the kind of hard line that continues to be held at this time.
I wish I knew more about it, but I think the only experiment the Ontario prison system had with actual privatization was when Central North got built. And they ended up having to like buy it back and like retake control over it because it wasn't working for like a number of reasons. Like it wasn't cheaper, first of all, is like the thing they care about, but then there was also like there was a particular giant riot inside, but a bunch of other moments of like, you know, just like unrest and dysfunction that ended up making the government look bad. And it's that double narrative, right, where they want to do the kind of like tough on crime thing, but then they also want to be these like progressive forces of elites looking out for everybody, which is just must be a hard position for them. It must be really hard.
I remember hearing a story about a battering ram at Central North as part of that big riot.
Yeah, they used to be flashing on the benches, but people dealt with that problem and they turned it to their own ends.
We're trying to build a prison.
You're listening to From Embers, airing first on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Tonight, we're sharing an interview with three anarchist authors behind Escaping Tomorrow's Cages, a six-part essay that lays out the coming wave of prison expansion in Ontario and proposes a strategy for how these projects might be opposed. Find it online at escapingtomorrowscages.org. I've noticed in the texts and the text series but you spend a lot of time addressing the question of recuperation. Can you sketch an outline of what you mean by recuperation and why it's a problem for anti-prison struggles?
Yeah, I think that at its core, prison expansion is a recuperative initiative. I think this goes back to like how we walk this fine line of being like anti-reformists and trying to support prisoners and their struggles inside.
I mean, I think that any struggle that like is such a long game, like fighting against prison, like is very vulnerable to sort of falling into talking about reforms or like talking about recuperation. And like in this case, like recuperation meaning like, I guess the state or like another powerful force taking particular like demands and like making them very narrow, or like agreeing, yeah, to like the narrowest interpretation of things that like more radical demands people have or things people are fighting for. And then like, especially like using that to stop the conversation. And like, yeah, having like in some cases, like having governments like agree to some demand that people are making to try and like make prisoners' lives a bit better will just like can like stop the movement in its tracks. And like that's what we are trying to be very careful about, and I think that's why we spend a lot of time talking about that and just emphasizing that like the struggle has to be ongoing, and even in certain cases, like if there are like wins that prisoners get and like things that people on the outside are like backing up those like prisoner-led struggles, that ultimately like the conditions of people being in prison, people like remain in prison, and like that's like still a thing to be struggling against.
I mean, it feels just important in general to argue against better forms of prison, mm-hmm. and to argue against every single attempt at the prison system improving itself, regardless of what it is, while also continuing to like support the struggles of people on the inside fighting for their own conditions, which can sound like a contradiction, but I just don't think it is. I think there's just like a thing that we can miss, that when a struggle emerges, a demand emerges from the inside, its context changes, whether or not you're currently incarcerated, arguing for something like less overcrowding and fewer lockdowns. And then if your person on the outside is taking that demand, if you're on the outside, you're just making a policy argument, right? Like you're talking about essentially like number of staffing hours and like number of like prisoners per unit. Whereas if you're on the inside, you're challenging the power of the institution like over your lives, and you're building relationships of solidarity through struggle, right? Like these things are fundamentally different. And when we're taking up these reformist demands on the outside and we start arguing for better prison, we're undermining solidarity on the inside, because a lot of these so-called like reforms and improvements in conditions aren't handed out to everybody. Like they're not being produced as rights, they're being produced as privileges. And so ultimately, like every privilege that the prison system creates is a way of creating distinctions between different classes of prisoner and inventing whole new classes of prisoner in order to say that some are better than others and some are like more redeemable than others and some are willing to like recognize the error of their ways or recognize the ways that they're like sick and hurt and need to heal or whatever garbage is being shoved down people's throats as like the option to get out of their cage. And so when we start supporting that stuff too, we are contributing to the isolation of the people we should be most in solidarity with, which is like the most antagonistic prisoners. So I would say it's just unprincipled to say that you're supporting prisoner struggle while also supporting better prisons.
Yeah, and I think I would just add to that also that in order to accomplish like the anti-recuperative nature of this struggle, we want to like be having this conversation like in wider context. So, you know, we all have our opinions that we share about prisons and about, you know, the struggles of prisoners on the inside. this expansion project is going to attract, like, you know, as we've been talking about, this initiative is going to be attracting a wider swath of people that aren't necessarily all anarchists. And so in order to, like, accomplish fighting against recuperation, we need to be having these bigger conversations with people where we're talking about, like, what does it mean to be supporting reforms from the state, you know, and what does that mean that that's going to be like for the prisoners on the inside, and, you know, giving these examples and just, like, having other people that aren't our comrades confront these brutal truths about what the prison system is.
Yeah, I'm aware of, like, I'm at least in Kempville, I'm aware of at least one, I don't know if you'd call it like a citizens group or like a local coalition, that's called the Coalition Against the Proposed Prison, that is fighting the prison construction in Kempville for their own reasons. I think their reasons are also diverse. But I don't know if there's a similar formation emerging in Thunder Bay or not. But how would you propose relating to, you know, especially in the context of this call for a province-wide struggle? How do you see groups like that, which emerge outside of our own context, fitting into this overall strategy that you're proposing?
It's a good question. And I'm not aware of a similar group in Thunder Bay. I mean, if it's farther away from us here in Southern Ontario, and if there's, like, folks who are doing organizing up there, I really hope our text reaches them, and we'd, like, love to connect with those people. And similarly, I think, like, we're really, like, hoping, and I think we'll try and make sure that, like, this text, like, reaches folks currently organizing in Kempville and want to, like, connect with those people. And I think that, I mean, already, even, like, with that particular group of organizing, it's been cool to see some of their, like, the connections that, like, from afar it looks like are being built with, like, another group in Ottawa that's, like, a bit more, like, explicitly, like, abolitionist and radical, the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project. And I think that, like, one thing is, like, we're talking about, we've sort of proposed people looking at this as, like, broader or, like, regional strategies or, like, a regional struggle. So it's, like, partly because we don't want to get sort of, like, tied up in, like, a sort of NIMBY politics of, like, people being like, this just can't happen in, like, this site because we don't like it here. We don't want it in our community. And, like, ensuring that this sort of conversation remains about fighting against prisons in general. But that said, like, one of our goals is for these projects not to be done. And that does mean, like, in some sense, like, in some cases, fighting, like, the particular sites of construction where those are happening. And I think that, like, groups that are organizing locally can be, like, really useful in that. Like, in one sense, I kind of don't care what narrative people are using to, like, fight the prison, or if they're, like, using, like, a range of narratives. I do care in that, like, if your analysis around prison isn't good, you will just, like, fall victim to sort of certain traps around reform or around, like, you know, if you're, like, particular, like, NIMBY sort of, like, complaints can be placated, then you're, like, actually fine with this prison, and, like, obviously we would find that unacceptable. But so I think, like, the goal maybe would be, like, supporting those folks in, like, their organizing, or just, like, seeing ways that, like, other organizing can complement it, and also, like, ideally, like, being in conversation with them to sort of be able to broaden their reasons for fighting against a prison, and, like, hopefully have that also coming from a bit more of a place of hating prisons and just realizing that they're, like, unacceptable wherever they're built.
I think those people that you're referring to, the coalition out of Kempville, they are it's awesome. Like, there's a news article about them that calls them the accidental activists, and I think that's great. And I think that, like, I think we can learn something by just remaining open to working with those people. I mean, we all have our own origin stories, you know, like, whether it's Occupy or G20 or whatever it is, And maybe this is, you know, a moment for someone that will be able to make those connections and reach across some boundaries that were previously unreachable.
Totally. Are there other struggles against prison that you're sort of drawing on in terms of trying to learn lessons from prior attempts to stop prisons in other places?
I guess one recent example from this sort of part of the world is like looking to the fight against the migrant prison in Laval, which was like a struggle that was like taking place in Montreal and Quebec, like over the past number of years. And like that prison did get built, but there's like a number of things from that struggle that like I found inspiring. Like just like seeing the variety of like direct action tactics that people took to fight against many different sort of profiteers off that project, like especially construction companies and architects and other people who are like playing essential roles in getting that prison built. I just over the past number of years like have really like enjoyed watching that from afar and felt really inspired. And another thing that I thought was cool about that particular struggle was just like the way that it integrated into just like a general politic in the region. Just I remember like seeing like how one year like the May Day march went by and like targeted offices of like people working on that project. And like that is something that I would love to see happen with this, is just like that it just sort of like becomes a focus of people when they're thinking about potential like where they want to put their energy in terms of organizing, or in terms of whether it be like longer campaigns or just like one-off like direct actions, that like it's a thing that people think about in terms of places to struggle or parties to take action against.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier the struggle that was focused in Kingston around the federal prison expansion, and that was definitely a struggle I learned a lot from, because I think folks who were involved in it put a lot of energy into education and into doing research and like circulating research and making it accessible. And so I think that is an inspiration for us for sure when we're thinking about like we want to circulate accurate information about these projects that people can use as tools, and we also want to couple that with like some pretty just direct arguments about a way of thinking about anti-prison politics and struggle. Then also a big reference point for us in we've been doing our own strategic thinking about this has been the struggle against the maxi prison in Brussels that took place in different kind of phases, kind of between 2008 and maybe like 2014 or something. That was characterized by like a really fierce attack on like recuperation, and also thought a lot about the relationship between inside and outside struggle, and really trying to break down the idea that the struggle against prison belongs only to people who are incarcerated or like have been incarcerated, and to think about the ways that like the kind of shadow of prison touches everyone's lives, and all of the kind of like oppressed and excluded of this world like experience the violence of prison even if they never are in, and that also like the struggles of the people on the outside against those same institutions are always in communication with folks who are inside, and one is not necessarily more legitimate than the other. I thought that was very powerful, and they also did that as a specific anarchist struggle. So just really using that as an opportunity to push forward an anarchist politic and show it is like specifically possible when you approach a kind of like narrow struggle about a particular construction project with this like bigger anarchist analysis of how power functions, and also the like kind of like wide tactical toolbook that like anarchists have to draw on. It was a very, very exciting, campaign. Hopefully there'll be some more translated materials coming out about that soon.
Yeah, in your discussions on strategy too, there's a terminology of dramatizing the issue that comes up a few times, where you talk about different ways that you know, action can be taken against public consultations or something like that, with the goal of dramatizing the issue. Can you explain what's meant by that and how it kind of works to change how people think about prison?
I mean, I think it's sometimes like these are very like logistical issues, right? Like these are, the government can make issues like this seem extremely boring. And that if we're just talking about like budgets and like policy and contracts and like amounts and things like that, then it can all start to seem very like managerial, and also like what my friend said earlier about letting the government kind of like frame the issue of like what are the things that can be gained or lost, and like what are the terms on which we can discuss incarceration. I think when we dramatize the issue, it allows us to kind of create our own narrative and also force people to pick sides. And so that can happen oftentimes by creating visible conflict in places where otherwise there wouldn't be. And so that can look like, in this case, targeting recuperators, targeting places like OPSU, or in, I would say, gentler ways, putting a little bit of pressure on some of these other well-intentioned, maybe, institutions that want to support treatment for people with like mental illness, but who have ended up supporting their further incarceration, or who might want to be arguing for like more programming and educational opportunities within prison, but are actually end up making an argument for people to remain incarcerated. So I think by dramatizing that and being like, you know, you are participating in this violent process, we can actually like pull people away from the project itself, and leave like sort of a vacuum of where no one is stepping close enough to this project, and it just appears for what it is, which is like cages being built for humans. Mm-hmm. So just how do we make conflict visible? How do we push it into the open? How do we force people to pick sides? How do we define the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I like that because it you know, I think about just other things that have challenged hegemonic thinking or forced people to question their own common sense about things around celebrations of Canadian nationalism or Sir John A. Macdonald in recent years, in my own context, where certain actions that were taken seemed unthinkable at first, and now they'd be considered a totally legitimate way to express your position on the question of the Canadian state or something like that. So I think it is a really worthwhile way to think through like how people can, I don't know, imagine a different world where it seems just so entrenched in everyone's thinking, you know, in regular society or whatever. In the section on organization, I think the highlights that are sort of offered in this proposal are decentralization. I'm sort of paraphrasing, but decentralization, autonomous action, self-organization, and some level of coordination. And I get that it's a proposal and it takes many people to form organization or whatever, but sort of what are you hoping to push as a way that people could work together on this on a province-wide or regional basis?
I think obviously like all of the things you just said means that we're hoping will be like emergent. But concretely, next steps we'll be thinking about involve going towards spaces that already exist, groups that already exist, that either have said that they have some kind of critique of prison, or that we believe that would be consistent with other things that they think, and then asking them to also think about this particular issue and like organize around it in their own way. And then we would also be encouraging people to, alongside that, self-organize, meaning start their own collectives, because really all we are is like a handful of friends who hate prison and have a history of doing prisoner solidarity work. Anybody can do this, like anybody. So just encouraging other people to like form their own little crews, make some resources and information available to them, create some infrastructure for how folks can share their own ideas and their own priorities and their own reports about their actions, and also put those into communication with each other. So hopefully we're going to end up a product of that with a kind of constellation of organizations that have decided to take on an anti-prison expansion plank alongside maybe other things, as well as collectives that are taking this kind of decentralized and autonomous action. And then our goal with decentralization and self-organization then is to produce a dialogue through practice, which we'd argue is richer than centralization within like a single body in terms of its like potential. It's also harder to repress and shut down. It's also harder to recuperate because there is nobody who can say that the struggle is over. There's nobody who can tell anybody else what their demands are. And we think that kind of like richness and diversity just makes things more fun. It makes it more creative. It means that we have more space to disagree with each other and do things in our own ways, but like also be complementary. I think it takes away the kind of like all or nothing that can happen when there's an organization that's trying to control an issue and like own what is like sensible to say about it. And it also maybe gives us a little bit of space to like let things grow slowly and to, you know, like we have different levels of goals. It's like, obviously we want to stop some prisons. We want to delay them as much as possible in the way to stopping them. But also we have these goals around just like circulating a certain kind of analysis, changing the culture around prisons overall, supporting practices of anarchist self-organization, putting ourselves in a better position for other rounds of prison expansion, because it's only a few years ago that the Liberal government created the Toronto South Detention Center and the new Windsor prison. It was only a few years before that that the NDP provincial government and the Liberal provincial government created Maplehurst and Penetang. These things are always going on and they'll continue to go on. So if we can, the organizing that we do now will become the context in which we're organizing 5 years from now when they maybe go to the Hamilton or London areas and try to build some new prisons there. So I think also like we want to be able to aim as high as we think we can get, but it also lets us kind of like stay flexible and hit intermediate goals along the way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I think it's important to, and I think you have identified some intermediate goals in what you just said. But I think definitely with anti-prison struggles, and especially anti-prison struggles that are very anti-reformist, it can be really hard to find any victories in any kind of short-term way. Things can feel very all or nothing. So do you have sort of an idea of what victories could look like in this case, and particularly in the kind of intermediate sense, short of fully abolishing all prisons?
That's goal number one. Some goals that I've thought about are maintaining like thoughtful connections with different groups or different individuals along the way of this, just like having those conversations and making more people aware and, you know, getting people excited to go and talk to their own crew of friends or affinity groups or whatever it is, to just, you know, be changing this conversation. And then on top of that, just making support of this expansion project unpopular. Just if there is any sort of financial backing or even social backing for this project, that it would immediately get attacked in some sort of way. Just, you know, that people, there would be this vacuum of not being able to publicly come out in support of this initiative. I think that would be a really cool thing to achieve.
Another one that we've talked a bit about is just like having this organizing like remain in conversation with inside prisoner organizing. It's like a thing that we all spend some time on anyways, and like, yeah, my friend was mentioning the example from Brussels, which I think is really cool. And like, yeah, we were talking about how like the meaning of prisoner demands changes whether, you know, you're looking at it kind of from inside or outside the prison walls. But prison organizing and like the prisoner-led organizing in the last few years has been really powerful, and I think that like still finding ways to like be in conversation with like like folks in prison who have like put so much on the line and like actually like I don't know, we've connected with like a number of individuals in the last few years who like weren't particularly politicized before going into prison, who like are now like prison radicals and organizers, like finding ways for like our struggles on the outside to like remain in like in conversation with those people feels really valuable to me.
Is there, this is maybe a bit of a tangent, but is there much coordination among inside prison organizing across institutions in Ontario that you're aware of, or is it fairly localized?
I would say it's a thing that we've, that is sort of a thing that we've seen in the last few years, just like even in hunger strikes that have taken place over like the course of the pandemic, like one of the things that like we've seen happen is this is like, it's funny because it's like a condition that sort of the prison system has created for itself, but just like in transferring people who have like participated in strikes in like one institution and then get transferred, like either like punitively because they've like done organizing or just like for whatever other reason, like will then come and like spread things they've learned to like other prisons. Like we've literally seen this happen a number of times, or like someone will be in one prison and then they'll get like transferred to another and be like, wow, the conditions here are even worse, I can't believe what people here are dealing with, and like want to organize around that. And like we also know that even just like we have like connected with prisoners who have just like literally like seen like on the news or like read in the newspaper about like prison organizing happening in other places in Ontario and then have like done organizing in response to that. So I don't know if that's like the kind of things that you mean, but like I
think, totally.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, like it's like pretty cool how like prisoner organizing like in different places in Ontario like is sort of like echoing organizing happening in other places.
Mm-hmm. And would you say at this time that these prison expansion projects are on the radar of inside prison organizers that you're in touch with?
That's a good question. I can't say that I have had so many conversations with folks about that. I've seen a little bit of communication coming out of like Ottawa and just like some of the people who do like a prison phone line, like support line kind of project there, who have like at least written about like conversations they've had with folks on the inside who are like well aware that like the conditions that they're dealing with at the Ottawa Carleton Detention Center are like being used as a justification to build a new prison a little bit down the road, you know, and like organizers have just like put out their own like writings or whatever being like, yeah, people don't buy that and like aren't down for another prison to be built just because they're like dealing with overcrowding and like horrible conditions here. So I'm really grateful that people are having conversations about that with like folks in that region. And I don't know, it's a conversation that'll probably continue to come up, for anyone. I think it's great when that conversation can come up with anyone who's sort of doing like inside outside organizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like there's always a bit of a tension around doing organizing about prison that isn't prisoner led. So I think probably there's going to be some effort of like trying to find prisoners who care about this issue in like a way that people outside want to act on it anyway. And I would just say we just don't need to do that. That I think like we can continue supporting people inside organizing around the things that they want to, and we can just be honest and real as we build relationships with people about the things we also care about. Just like we already do, you know, like when we're talking to folks on the inside, we're talking about the shit that's going on like in our lives and struggles out here. You know, it's never saying that supporting them is like the only game that we got going, you know, and I think that's just like what being part of like a struggle against a huge system is. And if there does end up being some like organic struggle inside against that at some point, possibly around transfers between institutions, wouldn't be surprised. Then we'll be in a better position if we've talked it up. But I would encourage people to not make the one contingent on the other. You know, you don't gotta hold yourself hostage like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm also like, I think you mentioned earlier that one of the justifications for the Thunder Bay jail is that it will be, people will be incarcerated closer to their home communities or something like that. But with the Kempville jail, it's the inverse is true, where most of the people in OCDC are from Ottawa, live in Ottawa. And if they are incarcerated in Kempville, it's going to make it much more difficult for their families and friends to be able to visit them and all this kind of stuff. So it's sort of the inverse situation to the supposed justification for the Thunder Bay project.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to make it like more like what it's already like in Thunder Bay in terms of how far people have to drive to get there from the city, you know? But I mean, that's like, it's becoming more rare that prisons are right inside cities, you know, like a lot of the wave of prison expansion in the 90s and 2000s already made people doing like a 2-hour drive going from Toronto or whatever.
So certainly you've put this out with the idea of trying to encourage people to get somewhat of a head start on these projects as they're all still in their pre-construction situation right now, right? So can you give a bit of a timeline for what you expect to see over the next few you think people could be doing now to prepare if they are inspired to self-organize around these issues?
One of the things is that like there is there's like opportunities to like oppose things.
Good evening, it's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, an island traditionally known as Tojage in Ganyagahaga and Munyang in the language of Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, August 4th, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests. Robert Sierra explains the competitive world of improv in French and how he unites circus and improv at La Tohue this month.
I don't think that comedians have the same skills to adapt so quickly. And circus people are great people. They know that they have to be careful doing everything they do, and there's so much tension.
Phenomena Festival Director General Dee Kim gives you a soupçon for her upcoming Dada Cabaret.
I'm not trying to imitate the Dada artist, in the 1920 years, when it